Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
The fourth and third and final second. You know, they got cancellations, they got schedules, the NFL's moving everything around. The second and final presidential debate happens tonight, and healthcare is going to be part of one of the topics I think that comes up. And we thought we'd talk about it for an hour here. We just spent a half an hour with, or 25 minutes with Steph Sterling, Vice President, Senior Advisor at the Roosevelt Institute. And now we're talking to Michael Cannon, Director of Health Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you, Tom?
I hope it's okay to call you Mike.
I prefer Michael, and I really appreciate you asking. Thank you.
Well, okay, Michael, I just want to make everybody happy. Tell me about the healthcare system in the United States. Is it the best in the world?
Well, on some dimensions, yes, but on other dimensions, no. You know, we have the most innovative healthcare sector in the world. We produce cures that save lives across the globe. One is Sovaldi, which is a 95-97% cure for hepatitis C, developed in the United States, saving lives of Hep C patients around the world. And so in that sense, the U.S. healthcare sector is not only the best in the world, but it's also making health and healthcare more universal in every country across the globe. But we do fall short in a lot of ways. For example, we have a lot of wasteful spending in our healthcare sector. We have eliminated the normal market mechanisms that would keep prices in check, so that we have outrageously high prices for a lot of drugs and other medical goods and services. And that prices a lot of people out of the market, so they can't afford the life-saving medications that are available to people, you know, with insurance or who have the means. And, you know, Sovaldi is one of those. And so we need to strike a better balance in this country between creating those innovations and making them affordable to more people. And really the way to do that is just to eliminate the things that we've done that disable the normal market mechanisms that force healthcare providers to compete on price and quality. Hey, go ahead, Tom.
No, sir. Go ahead, Michael. I'm listening.
Oh, well, so right now, the government controls about 80% of health spending in the United States, 50% of it directly through government programs like Medicare and Medicaid. And then it controls another 20-30% by telling us that it's going to tax us more unless we give a sizable chunk of our earnings to our employers and let them purchase our health insurance for us. And so the consumer here doesn't control any of this money, and they really act like it when they go out into the marketplace, because we're all spending other people's money in the healthcare sector, so we're not as careful about it, about how we spend it. And producers know that, so they charge outrageously high prices for doctor's visits, for hospital stays, for drugs and medical devices. And if we just returned the money, $4 trillion that we spend in our healthcare sector, if we just returned that money to the consumer, the person that the system is supposed to serve, they'll start demanding lower prices and higher quality than what they're getting right now. And producers, healthcare providers will have to deliver on what consumers want, or else they're not going to get paid. And when we do that, when we get everybody to start treating healthcare like it is a precious resource, and demanding that that producers find ways to make it more affordable, that's the most important thing we can do to bring healthcare within the reach of people who are priced out of the market right now, the vulnerable, the poor, and the sick.
So we're talking to Michael Cannon, Director of Health Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Let me ask you about waste, because that was the first thing you mentioned. What kind of waste are you talking about eliminating, and what would that, and on a couple of things here that I'm going to talk to you about, what would it look like? Take us down the street level for Michael or Tommy or whomever going to the doctor. What would it look like? In terms of waste, where is the majority of the waste, and how would you eliminate that?
Well, it's all over the place. It's throughout the healthcare sector. But let me give you a couple of examples. You ever go to the doctor and think that was a waste of time? You ever go to the doctor and think, I didn't need to see the doctor. I only saw the doctor for 2 seconds. What happened, you know, all the care I got was from a nurse. Uh-huh. Or have you ever gone to the doctor to get a prescription and thought, I don't need a prescription for this. I should be able to buy this directly without over-the-counter. There are all sorts of reasons we end up going to the doctor, seeing a doctor, paying for a doctor when that's not what we need. The same thing happens with hospitals. All sorts of people are admitted to hospitals when they don't need to be, and they stay in hospitals longer than they need to be, and they get tests and even treatments that they don't need, that they didn't need and wouldn't get in other parts of the country or the world. And those additional wasteful tests and treatments and hospitalizations don't make the patients any healthier. They don't even make the patient happier with the care that they receive. And when researchers have tried to quantify just how much of that waste there is in the U.S. healthcare sector, they usually come up with a figure of about one third, which means, you know, we got a $4 trillion healthcare sector. That means we're spending $1 trillion on stuff that isn't making anyone any healthier. On healthcare, that isn't making anyone any healthier. That's a pure income transfer from workers to healthcare providers. It doesn't make anyone better off along the way. And if we gave patients, if we gave the consumer that $4 trillion instead of letting government and employers control it, then we would do we would get rid of a lot of that waste. We would put that money to much better use. I just say, in time, we were seeing the benefits I was mentioning before in terms of lower prices and broader access.
But in terms of empowering consumers, it would seem to me part of the reason that doctors run so many tests when you go to the hospital to make sure that there is no possibility of anything going wrong, although unfortunately sometimes things do, it's to cover their the back of their lab coats from a liability standpoint should anything go wrong. And I guess, how do you balance patients to not have these tests that they don't need, but yet not take away their power to sue for malpractice where it is legitimately needed? And you understand what I'm asking you?
Oh, I do. You know, there is defensive medicine out there. You know, when surgeons follow a checklist that research has shown reduces infections and reduces medical errors and adverse health outcomes, that's defensive medicine. And it's defensive medicine that protects them from a loss by saving lives, you know, by preventing injury. Now, there is some defensive – there is inefficient defensive medicine that doesn't do any of that. But that is at most just a couple percentage points of health spending, five tops, whereas waste is a third, according to researchers. And so there are ways of dealing with that inefficient defensive medicine problem that preserve your right to – compensation if a physician's negligence injures you. And the problem is maybe that there's not enough defensive medicine. There are so many medical errors that occur in the U.S. healthcare sector that where patients don't sue and don't get compensation. Estimates have suggested that the number of people who die in this country from preventable medical errors every year is anywhere from 100,000 to 400,000. That's preventable deaths, and the number of people who are injured is even greater. And so we definitely need a medical malpractice system in place to protect us from unsafe medicine. And I submit to you that if we had the consumers controlling the money and demanding higher quality and lower prices than they would be than they are right now when they're spending someone else's money, then we would see innovations along these dimensions that of quality that would make healthcare safer and protect physicians from liability by making patients safer.
When you say normal market mechanisms, are you talking about competition?
I am, but I'm also just talking about the consumer being conscious of the cost of what they're buying. You know, if you're spending someone else's money, you're not going to be conscious. You don't care about price. That's why when drugs are that should be over the counter are prescription only, drug manufacturers can charge crazy high prices for these drugs because they know that the patient doesn't care about the price the insurance company is paying, and they know that insurance companies are not very good negotiators when it comes to these things. Because if they try to drive a hard bargain and say, well, fine, if you're not going to give us the price reductions we want, we're going to drop your drug from our formulary, all the women who are using that form of oral contraception are going to say, why did you drop that from our formulary? They're going to get mad at the insurance companies. Mm-hmm. So the insurance companies are in a bind, and the drug companies are able to take advantage of all the ways that the government has made patients insensitive to price. If you move oral contraception from if you got rid of the government imposed prescription requirements on oral contraception, move that to over the counter, insurers wouldn't cover it so much. People would be paying for it out of pocket and the price would come down. What happened when the Affordable Care Act mandated full coverage for oral contraceptives is the price has doubled since then, since 2014 when that mandate took full effect. That's what both unnecessary prescription requirements and government encouraging excessive insurance does to healthcare prices. It prices people out of the market.
In terms of doctors and posting prices, et cetera, would that help anything, or would it be back to, like you're saying, you're spending the insurance company's money or somebody else's, so it would not help anything, or would it help?
If we let consumers control the money, if we let them control, it's really their money. The workers are the ones who earn this $4 trillion they're spending. If we let them control it, we wouldn't need to mandate price transparency because producers would just give consumers the price information they need, or else they're not going to get paid. A competing producer will provide them that information and steal your business from you. And if you mandate it, if the government mandates price transparency when consumers aren't controlling the money, consumers aren't going to use that information. And the price information will probably be useless. I mean, have you ever stayed in a hotel where they posted the prices on the back of the door? Mm-hmm. Of your hotel room door?
I've never looked at it, but I have stayed in hotels, yeah.
Yeah, many states require hotels to post their room rates on the back of each hotel room door, and nobody pays those prices. That's a price transparency law, but the prices are transparent, but they're completely useless because nobody pays those prices. Markets do a much better job of providing people transparent hotel prices, and they'll do a much better job of providing people transparent healthcare prices than a government mandate would.
You talk about percentages of the money that we spend on healthcare. What is the largest percentage? Does it have to do with end-of-life care for elderly people that sometimes are kept alive strictly because they can be?
Well, even larger than that is hospitalization. You know, there are a disproportionate share of your healthcare consumption will likely come toward the end of your life, the last 6 months, the last few years, just because hopefully you're going to live to a ripe old age and your body's going to start breaking down and you'll just need more care. That's perfectly natural. But mostly it's hospitalizations, some of which are due to people in the last stage of life, but not always, you know, and a lot of the waste comes from people who are not at the end of their lives. Although certainly a lot of it does come from there. When researchers survey seniors and ask, you know, how do you want to die? Do you want to die in a hospital like a pincushion, or do you want to die at home surrounded by your family? Seniors say they want to die in their homes. The share of seniors who end up dying in hospitals is much higher than the share who say they want to try heroic measures at the end of life. But people consume so much more end of life care precisely because that's what the government subsidizes.
Yep, and I always said,
if you want to,
Michael, I was just going to say before we let you go, you know, if you try to have a discussion about this, it's going to be politically viewed as death panels deciding who lives and who dies, et cetera. But I always said that if you were to give somebody two documents and say, now sign this and we can keep Agnes alive on machines for another 4 weeks, and then sign this as a second mortgage on your house because you'll be paying for this for 15 years, that's how expensive it is. I don't know how many people would demand the same coverage that they do under Medicare or Medicaid because it's being paid for. And I guess we'll have to pick it up there another day. Thank you, Michael Cannon, Director of Health Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll find out what Newell Norman's got planned for you on this Thursday, October 22nd, here on WWL.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.